my first contact really with with Vic, besides him being over in the Senate and me over in the House, Vic was known as a conservative, nice guy Republican over there who I did not hardly see at all.
Yeah. But
when he ran for governor, Denny Miles became his communication person.
Mm-hmm.
And Denny was my communication person in my very first election.
Oh.
See, because, and that's how I got to know Vic better,
right.
because it was through Denny. And
yeah.
we got to be very good friends with he and Doris, and just got to really, really admire his work. And I happened to be on Ways and Means at the time of the crisis of the budgets.
Yeah.
But Denny was very close to him, and of course Denny had been with the communication department down here. It's with news services.
Right.
So we were close friends for many, many years.
Yeah, he talks about his boss, and his boss was trained by my friend Fred Schuyler. So.
Oh.
So there you go.
Oh yeah. Oh. You had Fred Schuyler?
I didn't have Fred Schuyler. I knew my grandmother is Harriet Moore.
Oh, for God's sakes. Mrs. Librarian.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I just was at the Benton County Museum making sure that her ashes are sprinkled properly. She's fertilizing the plants on the outside.
Oh, bless her.
So I grew up with the Scheidlers were my second family.
Oh, Fred.
And so their kids, Betty Sue, who just died, but their grandkids now. So like at Thanksgiving and Christmas, we go over to the Scheidler house in Waldport where she retired, which is now a rental place. And so... Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Well, Betty was my classmate.
Uh-huh.
And I got to, I mean, not Betty, Sally, but I got to know Betty when she was a vice president of Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
But Fred and Mrs. Scheidler were in our church.
See,
they were in First Presbyterian, so that's how we got to know them. And Fred was, he was Mr. Communications and Journalism Man, honest right down the middle.
Yeah.
He and Wally Johnson, Sam Bass, all those guys were a great information department.
Yeah. I remember having a fascinating talk with Fred, who couldn't understand why people didn't support Denny Smith as strongly as they supported his dad.
Interesting.
And he's like, well, Fred, politics have changed.
Yes, they have.
And, you know, that's the way it is.
That's the way it went. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot from Picatinny's time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you got to know Vic and Dolores through Denny.
Through Denny.
And
then when he became governor, of course, we were working hand in hand.
Right.
Being down in Ways and Means, we saw Vic a lot. And I think it was his management style that got us through that first crisis. That was, a lot of people talk about the 208 one, but it was nothing compared to what the cuts had to be made, even though the budget was much smaller, 2.8 billion, we were told to cut $600 million out, and we cut 300 when with people like Vera Katz working hand in hand and all of those down in Ways and Means, and did the best we could. And we said, you know, we're going to tear it up if we take another 300 out. And he said, stop.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna raise taxes. We're not going to rip the fabric of the state apart.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I gained a great deal of admiration for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had some bills, I can't even remember all of them, that we used to have that went through and we would discuss up in his office. I think the only time I had an argument with Vic is I was not a strong fan of public corporations. And I wasn't a strong fan of SAFE, developing a public-private corporation out of SAFE. But they had such a... The private sector had done such a lousy job and had really never leveled with folks about what they were doing, that it turned a lot of people against him. And I think we finally said, okay, Vic, let's go ahead and try this. And it's worked out all right. It's been good competition for the private sector. But I think that's the only time I ever really sort of edged away and said, you know.
Was he totally private or totally public, or how was he on that?
Well, he was willing to buy into a public-private corporation model.
Okay.
Which was, you know, it's a havesy-havesy.
Yeah,
it's like OSHU, which I wrote a letter when I was Kitz Haber's halftime education advisor, and I said, you know, I said, I wouldn't do this. And but it had to do with the medical school, and Kitzhaber was off and away.
Yeah.
And those are things that haunted us ever since. You gave away the farm.
Yeah.
Took away all the transparency. And the legislatures have simply gone to sleep on their fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah.
On that area.
Yeah. Seems like the only person who's there is Mitch Greenlick watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's part of it, too. So.
He's part of it, too. Yeah. He's got his own axe to grind in that area. And
yeah.
Well, anyway, that's... I think the steady hand in the ship is what people got to admire Vic the most on, and his gentle way. His office was open.
Mm-hmm.
You could always get to see him. You knew that the press releases coming out were going to be... not tilted one way or the other, you're going to get a straight shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, of course, Denny had a lot to do with advising him on that kind of stuff too. Denny was a good governor's communication person.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could always march in, and he did not play favorites between Democrats or Republicans. If a Democrat added something to really talk to him about, into the office he could go.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with any of us on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm. So in your Ways and Means, so you're in the middle of budgets and tax cuts and all that stuff.
Yep.
And especially after, the first session has been described to me by several people as the apogee of Oregon income, and then it fell apart by the end of 79 because Paul Volcker raised interest rates, and From there until the end of Vic's time, it was
Vic never got up to really manage anything that was likable. That he could have a little fun being a governor with.
Yeah.
But I don't think we saw it coming for some reason. And in 79 session, we were pretty oblivious to what was going on nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to get people interested in taking a hard look at the tax structure in the state of Oregon, and that was going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s interim period, I remember going in and doing my favorite three stool stick on the need for a sales tax at that time. And young Peter Courtney came up to me in the hall and said, I'd like to join you on this. And I said, fine. Go with Rich Munn, lock ourselves in the closet, and try to see if we can get a bill out. That bill, 2001, Vic thought so much of because we had researched it so completely that he put his horses behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barbara Roberts used the same bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, going against the...
Goes nowhere.
Goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Goes nowhere.
Yeah.
When you have people like McIntyre coming along and say, well, I'm going to lower your taxes, and everybody says, oh, why? Great. Never thought about the responsibility went with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Vic had a great sense of responsibility to the state. He was a real Oregonian from that standpoint. He was not going to harm the state. He was going to do his best to keep the very best parts of it. I know that he felt sometimes the shadow of Tom McCall was...
Mm-hmm.
Above the whole spectrum of things. Everybody thought that Tom walked on water, but the grunt work, the hard thing of doing the things that were right, I put right square in Vic's domain.
Yeah. Vic tells a funny story, which I actually have corroborated. Tom and Vic going back to D.C. to testify on land use, and Tom didn't know anything about the bill. So the night before, they're in a hotel room in Washington, and Vic is just training him on this and also saying, I'm going to be right next to you, so if you gracefully defer, I'll just come in.
Yeah.
But classic Tom. Yeah. Classic Tom.
Yeah. 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 Well, you got to love Tom McCall because he really put Oregon on the map from the standpoint of the things he said. But... You do need people like Vic in politics who are basically willing to do the quiet work that needs to be done in keeping the state going. And Vic was that.
Yeah. So tell me about the actual management style with the committee. I've talked to Hardy Myers, And when Hardy was Speaker, he worked well with it was Gary Wilhelms. Wilhelms was the minority leader in the House at that point.
Yeah.
And this is like 81.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
But then Gary left. Talking to Gary, he actually just came and lobbied you guys as of January 1st.
Yeah.
Hardy didn't work well with whoever the next minority leader was. And so Hardy was talking about he was able to work, in effect, through Vic to work with the Republican caucus.
I can believe that, so, mainly because of the type of person Hardy Myers is.
Uh-huh.
Hardy is also gets way up in the pedestal in my idea of a good public servant.
Mm-hmm.
Hardy got beat up in his caucus all the time for doing fair things.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, how I got on Ways and Means as a second Republican was due to Hardy Myers holding out. And we used to go to lunch together once in a while. And we would say, you know, Hardy, if we could pick the very best people and make them committee chairs, wouldn't it be marvelous?
Mm-hmm.
And he was in total agreement with that. Mm-hmm. And he tried to do that, and they just about killed him mm-hmm. in his own party. And the night that we were sine die and picking the members for the interim period of 1977 Emergency Board,
mm-hmm.
Hardy had put my name forward to go on that. And the person who held that up was May Yee.
Mm-hmm.
May Yee wanted that job. Mm-hmm. And she held us there until 3 o'clock in the morning. They had to go into caucus time after time and make her some concessions in order to get her out of Ways and Means. She eventually got on through the Senate. But that's how I got on Ways and Means. I stayed there almost the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And Hardy was that kind of person that could work with people like Vic because they both were like-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, Vera Katz was too.
Mm-hmm.
She had more knowledge about the human resource. In fact, that was our big tough job in the recession period to try to keep the wheels on without hurting education too badly, because ballot measure 5 wasn't in. We had a little bit of wiggle room there.
Yeah.
But in the human resource area, trying to take care of the huge number of people that were out of work and were needing help, we met night after night in small groups just trying to figure out what the hell can we do
mm-hmm.
in committee to alleviate that. And Vic was always with us on that.
Mm-hmm.
He says, go look what you can do. Bring it back to me. We'll look it over. We'll talk it over. That's the way he ought to go.
Mm-hmm. What was the role of his staff in all of this? Were they substitutes for him, or were they staffing you in effect? I mean, how did his staff work?
Well, I'm trying to remember who in the hell were on the staff at that time, because they basically might were people that were pushing for personal attention, because I would have remembered them.
Mm-hmm.
But they were basically laid-back type of folks.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw more of Denny than I did of any of the others, mainly because whenever there was a crisis coming up in a particular area and there was going to have to be a press release, Denny was down there
mm-hmm.
listening in committee. I can remember Vic's team basically being, well, let's see, his chief of staff was Jerry Thompson.
She came in the 1980-ish. Lee Johnson yeah. was the first one.
Lee Johnson. Well, Lee Johnson had some of his own problems. So
tell me about those.
Well, I remember he had some trouble with some of the things he said as attorney. He was attorney general, wasn't he? And he had stepped down, or he was going to run for attorney general.
But he was. I'm just picking up on the things he was doing before, because I just know him as chief of staff, and it turns out he was this, that, and the other. So yeah, he had delusions of grandeur.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. And he wasn't the most well-liked Republican among the moderates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so when Jerry came in, she was a breath of fresh air
mm-hmm.
because she was like open like Vic. You know, if you had a problem in this committee, go talk to Jerry. And if Jerry thought, well, you ought to sit down with Vic too, let's go in and sit down with him and talk it over.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were problems that could be solved because they were financial budgeting problems.
Yeah.
I can't even, at this moment in time, can't even think some of the big pieces of legislation that we put through in those sessions. Most of it was so concentrated on the budgetary crisis. That
It's like Hardy remembers the judicial reform because that was his baby.
Yes, yeah.
And everybody describes that time as either the in 79, the specter of tax reform from major or Prop 13 is hanging over everything.
Everything.
And
right.
Then after that, it's crisis.
Right. So. Right. And, well, by the way, that was the best Judiciary Committee that was ever in the legislature. Because
mm-hmm.
it had Hardy, Frohnmeyer, guy from down in Ashland, Lombard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Kip
Rutherford. I'm not sure. It may have had Blumenauer, but I'm not sure whether it was Blumenauer or Kulongowski at that time that got mm-hmm. on there. But it was a great judicial committee, and they you could make sure that anything that came out of that committee was going to be with the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a hell of a lot of argument with it. I think at that time they were going for basically having the sentencing structure be somewhat uniform because we had the hanging judges in the mm-hmm. East and the more moderate ones in the West, and we weren't getting equal sentencing done.
Mm-hmm.
And then the uniform sentencing where for this thing you're going so many this and this and this. Judges didn't like that. They wanted the freedom to do their own thing.
Yeah.
But it was, I think, sort of leveled the playing field.
Yeah. That and the funding as well.
Yeah.
Moved it from counties to state.
Yeah. Well, in that time, too, we were the argument between district and circuit judges was going on.
Yeah.
And trying to merge those into one system. Then always the argument of whether the Supreme Court should be elected or whether it should be basically appointed only.
Mm-hmm.
But those arguments go on forever.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we look at West Virginia Supreme Court elections and we start thinking about them again.
Yeah, right.
When were you first elected into the House?
75.
75, okay.
There were three of us Republicans, all two moderates and one very conservative one.
Mm-hmm.
Frohnmeyer. Frohnmeyer and I were the only two from metropolitan areas mm-hmm. Republicans
mm-hmm.
that fought uphill against the Nixon tag.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the Republicans got pretty well wiped out across the country. But we had a great caucus with 22 people in the Republican caucus. I think we got more accomplished because it was predominantly a moderate group. Norma Paulus
mm-hmm.
was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Bunn was in there at that time. Bill Gwynn from Albany, who was mm-hmm. a delight. Phil Kinsey. It was a great caucus. It had just a nice little conservative Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon, but never to the obnoxious level you see today on the mm-hmm. ultra-conservative side.
Mm-hmm. So talk about that change. You make a good argument that when Vic is elected governor in 78, things like the moral majority, you know, the overt social conservative stuff, just getting started.
Right.
By the time he leaves in 87, firmly in there, the Republican Party is moving towards the total social conservative takeover that happens in the 90s. You know.
Well, I can almost tell you the precise time. In 1988, I remember sitting in one of the Republican get-togethers, and at that time, I think Larry Campbell's was starting to flex his muscle.
Mm-hmm.
They decided they would accept the RNC to come out and give them advice on how to run elections.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
And I'm convinced if you wanted to make an interesting book, and I've often thought it'd be a hell of a story to write what the real game plan of the Republican Conservative Party is,
mm-hmm.
starting back at that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably, more than anything, we must take over state legislatures
mm-hmm.
because that has the apportionment of districts. Mm-hmm. And if we can control that, we can control votes. Mm-hmm. If we can get that, we can put in our own bills that were basically coming out of ALEC. Mm-hmm. And we eventually would have a farm club for presidency and key offices mm-hmm. in the country. It was a hell of a game plan, and it was well thought out. It was just like a bunch of generals getting together. The one thing that pulled the moderates away, why we started to get squeezed out, is their intent was always, key point, no new taxes. Tattoo it on your top of your forehead. Mm-hmm. Second was, last-minute blowdown campaign. Mm-hmm. Demonize the opponent. Find something nasty about him and coming out the last minute so you can get him. Mm-hmm. And that was the keystone of their argument. And most of the moderates, at that time at state level, we were putting up with people like Walter Huss mm-hmm. and some of those way out people. And the moderates would show up at the state party meeting in Bend or into the Seventh Mountain. And we put up a proposal, we get booed. Mm-hmm. So most of the moderates walked out and said, let's go have fun in town and hell with these guys. And
yeah.
And the tone just constantly got worse and worse, where it was win at all cost. The hell with the state, you know, and basically it's get the power. Mm-hmm. And once you got the power, use it. And that really, to me, turned me off, and I know it turned a lot of the people off who were moderate in their persuasion.
Yeah. Yeah, I know in my own family, which is Republican back to Lincoln, that's when, like, my mother started switching. And Mary Jane Dellenbach actually said, we need you in the party.
Yeah.
My mother finally said, I just can't stand it.
Yeah, yeah. So what you do is you drift to the independent side.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can watch what goes on, but it's not a good place to be either.
Yeah. I discovered in talking to one of Vic's nephews, Vic's older brother, Edward, is still with us. And Edward voted for Obama twice. He never told Vic that.
Well, Vic's brothers, geez, they saw a lot of action to World War II.
Yeah, they were both POWs out of the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah. They're lucky to be alive.
Yeah, they're very lucky.
Because a lot of the captured guys were shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, Vic, the other thing that always was I appreciated, Vic never placed in higher ed, at least, his own alma mater ahead of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The state system to him was the best way to go. It worked. We had good chancellors.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until there was some shenanigans that... It had been a constant battle since 1929 when they were formed up.
Yeah.
As you know.
Yeah.
And there's always this piss and match going on and who was going to give their president the most pay and all of this. But it became fairly obvious. It wasn't showing up in Vic's time, but with the crisis in higher ed going on, gradually what we got into, in fact, this is my next article I'm writing on right now, is I'm building it around if you say fee and I say taxes, or do you say taxes and I say fees, let's not do it again, or, you know, after the Fred Astaire thing.
Exactly, let's call the whole thing off. Yeah.
Let's call the whole thing off?
Yeah.
It was at that time in 1981 when, to get out of the jam, agencies that basically had the ability to raise fees,
mm-hmm.
we said, okay, our intent was not to continue that.
Mm-hmm.
But because it became an art form and it took the legislature enough off the hook in all of the tight budgets,
mm-hmm.
that it has gained momentum. So this is why you have the high tuition in higher ed. This is why OPB went out.
Right.
This is why people were questioning DEQ. When I was on DEQ, mm-hmm. more and more of our fees were tied to the ability of the people we were basically had our fee structure on and they were calling the shots about how things ought to be run.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to become a servant then of people who are paying those fees, dictating legislation.
Right.
Now, the students weren't powerful enough to do this. They couldn't really squawk enough to get the fees down.
Yeah.
But you get large corporations in there that were benefiting from fee structures, and they saw their fees going up. They wanted to have more say-so at the table.
Yeah.
And so we basically have been lucky. We've gone along on these roller coaster gradually up. But we sit out here now with some horrendous problems that I'm sure Vic never thought that the fee structure way back here in 1981 would evolve into that direction.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he did an oral history in 92, 93 with the Oregon Historical Society. Hundreds of pages, of which I've read every single one. But it's interesting because we look at things, we understand the past and where we are in the present.
Yeah.
And so he's looking there, and he talks a lot about Major 5.
Yeah.
Because it just hit. We're trying to figure out all those things. But what I'm discovering is what you described. This is something that was embedded 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
And still with, kind of like the kicker, is still with us.
Right.
Which solved a 1979 problem, but it has taken on a life of its own.
I went back and looked at the kicker piece of legislation because most of the Republicans voted for it. And I did too. At the time, everything sounded okay. It's Vic's bill, if you ever look at it. But the guys that were behind it were Markham and the guy from Grants Pass.
Jason Bowe?
Well, Jason wasn't one of the ones.
Okay.
It was a House of Representatives.
Okay.
And so it was Douglas County and Grants Pass and not even Medford. But that down there, they thought that was a fair way to go. We'll put in this because that's the only way you can get people to control the growth of government.
Mm-hmm.
And Rich Bunn used to tell us in Revenue Committee, he said, you know, you got to be careful with that. Because when you start tying things to something that is measurable out here by a group of people that is strictly supposition of where things are going to go economically, it's going to get you in knots.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the other thing, it never goes up in a straight line. And these guys were absolutely convinced of the Laffer curve.
Oh, yeah.
That the thing was going to go up like this, and consequently, you could always give people back the money that they rightfully. And people are absolutely convinced now that taxes collected for running government basically always need to be returned if there's an excess, and it just doesn't work. But anyway, once that got entrenched, and then when they stuck it in the Constitution, it became a bear cat to get rid of. I can't remember who put that in, but they sure did run it through.
Yeah. That and then the Gordon Smith variation that had us get a check. Although that's gone now. So if we have a kicker this year, it's going to be a tax thing.
Tax rate, yeah. Because you save a lot of money mailing it out.
You betcha.
Gordon Smith. I remember. I wanted to talk to Gordon Smith about a particular bill one day. And I marched into his office. He was Senate President at that time, I think, or Majority Leader. Yeah.
I still vividly remember that because that's Kitzhaber's first term, and Gordon gave a speech that was about as long as Kitzhaber's.
I wouldn't doubt it.
It's like, you know, you're just the President of the Senate. You already have a speech over here. Shut up.
But I marched in the office and hear all of these cameras around. I said, Gordon, I thought we were going to just have a nice, quiet little talk about a piece of legislation. He says, well, I thought just I'd bring these guys. I'll see you around. I walked out of them. Jeez. He was a piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Politics is a strange game. Yeah. Ballot Measure 5 really did us. I'll tell you what really picked us off, too, was we decided to do school equalization at the same time we were absorbing Ballot Measure 5.
Yeah.
And I was co-chair of Ways and Means, just tearing my friggin' head out on what the hell to do with that, because here we were, had all the school districts coming in, everybody from poorer, smaller school districts who had always wanted to have bands and music and mm-hmm. art, and were pointing to those big school districts that had those programs, and they said, now under school equalization, you're going to get some more money and you can put those kind of programs in. No, these cotton pickers never did.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is they slammed their money in the bank, and when all the rest of us were cutting school, like the Corvallis, Portland,
yeah.
Eugene,
yeah.
were cutting, these guys had enough money to run through and weather the storm.
Yeah.
But and then when Delna got up on the floor and said, now we know that you big school districts that have given in church, I'm paraphrasing,
mm-hmm.
basically we're going to try to bring you up next time around,
mm-hmm.
you up to where you were, and once this equalization is, shoot, we never came close.
Yeah,
came close. The leadership changed at that time, and there wasn't any attempt to do it, and we still weren't out of the woods. And then putting in ballot measure 5 changed the whole world.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk about Vic as an ex-governor. One thing that he says, which, and this is 92-93, and I think it's wrong, but he said that no one ever came to him to ask about how to run a campaign, even though he'd won twice at the statewide level. So what was that all about?
Yeah.
But talk to me about him as an ex-governor.
Well, my contact with him when he left office was only a few times that Denny and Doris and Vic, we were out sitting having a picnic or something like that and would talk, so I didn't see him very much
mm-hmm.
because being down here in Corvallis,
yeah.
you know, ex-governors became almost invisible mostly and most of the time, unless they were somebody like Tom McCall,
yeah.
always making press.
Yeah.
But Vic was, I think if people wanted to, I really think people didn't appreciate what a great contribution Vic had made as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And had not gone up and said to him, well, look, we're in another jam. How would you manage this now?
Mm-hmm.
And gain some of the little tidbits that would have gotten you through some of the tough jams.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly didn't find that from Neil Goldsmith.
No.
And you certainly, Barbara, even though she was good, she had her Princess of Darkness who worked with us. She and Vic were, I think, pretty good friends, but I don't know if she ever asked anything of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be a good question to ask of Norma Paulus.
Yeah.
Because Norma, probably at the time she was really thinking about running for governor, should have probably been picking Vic's brains a little bit about how to do it, because I don't even know if Roger Martin ever went up and asked Vic, you know, how'd
mm-hmm.
you do this?
Mm-hmm.
But I think Vic had such a, what I would call almost a Boy Scout image of honesty that people in some ways may have been afraid to really ask him something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Say, you know, you're so honest. How are we going to win this thing with your
right.
kind of honesty?
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. One person, I think Vic worked closely with Chris Dudley. And so that he's somebody I'm going to talk to. I was trying to talk to him at the memorial service, but Monica Webby and Dennis Richardson were hovering around him. And I don't talk to anybody who's running for office while they're running.
Yeah.
Like, no.
No.
I go by your public statements, period.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
And both of them were trying to get eye contact with me. Said,
yeah.
So I finally got to Chris Dudley, and I'll be talking to him. But, you know, you just don't hear.
No. I don't even know if Chris leaned on him at all.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know either. But it was amazing. I mean, Chris took the time to come up to this memorial service. And he's living in San Diego.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty amazing. So, you know, it's Yeah,
he was sort of a Bill Bradley type of guy, I think, if he'd ever had a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. No, I really, the most times I've seen Vic recently have been at the Roger Martin Old Timers Luncheon that is put on about once every couple of months. And in fact, I saw him, it had to be the last one, and then he passed away right after that.
Yeah, because there was the spring one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought he looked all right at that time. And it's interesting because some of the ex-governors like Kulongowski huddle around him looking and sort of admiring the fact that he's still going and doing it, doing his thing, they wish they had some of his stuff rub off on him.
Yeah, absolutely. But he was of the age that, you know, boy, when it goes, it's just a cascade.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's a good way to go.
Yeah, it is. It is. You would never, you would not have picked him as an athlete.
No. But we do have a signed Green Bay Packers contract.
Yeah. Yeah. Played football and, he didn't get his brains knocked out to where he couldn't think. No, those were I think some of the most productive years at the legislature were during that period that Vic was. I think that was the best learning period and the most congenial period that I saw in all the 20 years I was in. I never saw that kind of congeniality with any of the other governors. And that's funny because I thought Kitzhaber was going to be that way. In fact, I think he was probably his very first year term as governor. But he did some strange things. I guess they're turning out to be even stranger. So.
Yeah, with him. Because Kulongowski's kind of the same way. It's fascinating to look at the campaign style. Kulongowski and Kitzhaber both kind of gave the impression they didn't really like to campaign.
Yeah.
Whereas Vic, boy, he'll go anywhere to talk to anybody about anything. Yeah. He just loves that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, clearly we in Oregon rewarded Kitzhaber and Kulongowski overwhelmingly here.
Yeah.
Great. We're lucky about time and time again.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to look at the personalities and... You know, does that make a difference? It clearly does in terms of ease of getting things done, but does it make a difference in policy, or does it make a difference in...
Well, I think the thing that's the big deterrent right now in running for office is the fact that you spend all your time raising money.
Oh, yeah.
It takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah.
If you feel like you're a huckster going out there and asking for a contribution. Unfortunately, this district is the greatest district to serve.
Mm-hmm.
I never had to worry. After my first election, I never had a race. You know, we were running $6,000 races, $10,000 races, and so on. Now, if you want to run for this job, I would have had to have $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 even to get my stuff printed up.
You just be glad you weren't in the Senate race.
Yeah.
When Vic won in 78, he raised a record amount of money. Over $500,000.
Yeah.
And the equivalent of that today is $2 million.
Yep. Yeah.
That's one of these Oregon State Senate races.
Yep.
It's a different world.
It's a different world.
It's a wildly different world.
And I think it is corrupting that world pretty badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the Koch brothers can start putting money into a commissioner's race in Minnesota, you have to wonder about what the hell is happening.
Exactly. And we've got all the Betsy Johnson bill going through. But it's because part of it is Michael Bloomberg and Tom Steyer, a billionaire out of California, put their money into Oregon State Senate races to win those, to go around Betsy Johnson. And you bet Kate's going to sign those bills.
You bet, She's a tough bird.
Yeah.
Her father and mother were, well, they were just total opposites personality-wise. Sam was the low-key, sat-behind-me, fatherly type of guy, you'd like to have pat on your back when you're a young legislator. Elizabeth was a bulldog. She dug into education, and she chopped us up in little pieces and spit us out. She didn't like what we were doing. And I think Betsy is like her.
Yeah. So anything else about Victory that jumps out?
I will miss him. I will miss talking to him. Because
mm-hmm.
he was always a delight to talk to. And I think that if I could sit him over in the couch there, we could probably solve the majority of problems around in state government.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he would probably even propose ways to probably really get us back on a solid track tax-wise in the state.
Mm-hmm.
He probably would have some ideas on that.
Mm-hmm.
He fought hard on his sales tax. He took that sales tax, which was well written.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, we basically had Barbara Seymour look at every sales tax in the United States and pick out the best and the worst features that had to be avoided. And at the time we put it in, we called them the snapping turtles are going to come up on the beach the minute we drop the bill.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones that came up were the aluminum companies who didn't like the tax on the carbide rods that were going into the smelters.
I'll be darned.
Business community, basically, our sales tax, other than the collection aspect of it, they're rather neutral about a sales
mm-hmm.
tax.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Vic ran with that. I think he got talked into that comic book, which he today says was a poor decision on his part. He says, you know, that just wasn't the right thing. I thought at the time it was a good thing to educate the people in sort of a humorous way and talk about taxation, but he said, you know, it just backfired. And I think he was always disappointed that the campaign hadn't run the way he would have liked to run it.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, he thought a sales tax was probably the other leg of the stool that would get us through.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, one reason, from what we know, why Kitzhaber didn't push tax ideas, because
it
doesn't pull at all.
I frankly think, you know, just that's probably not part of your record about Vic, but I frankly have thought about the fact that if Washington can get along with the B&O tax, and we're always between the two states playing games between the black market stuff going back and forth and people saying it's cheaper on that side of the border and this side of the border and start lowering income taxes a little bit down, and that may be a better route to go. B&O is not too bad. It's sort of a corporate sales tax type of an approach.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe somebody might bring it up.
Yeah. Mark Hass says he's looking at things.
Well, yeah, Mark.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
Absolutely. Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm glad you're doing this for Vic. Are you going to put this in then a sort of a book form?
Yeah, this will be an OSU press. Vic wanted a book.
Okay.
If I were doing it by myself, it would be much more of a website out of which you could, you know, take and publish things.
Yeah.
But Vic really wanted a book, and I'm honoring that.
Good. Good.
And, you know, I don't care if there's a run of 500 and 490 of them go into libraries and 10 go to the 10 people who want them.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. But it's going to be basically the idea is there's eventually going to be a huge web thing so that people can go on and play around with it. And it's also pushing the limits. There's the Straub Archive, which has now been, they're backing away from that. But the Hatfield Archive, Barbara Roberts at Portland State, they're electronically connecting all of them.
Oh, good.
And so I'm kind of the first one to really rattle this electronic cage and see what can really be done with this.
Super.
And so it'll be, you know, a book to honor Vic, and then I hope moving into the future with what we can really do with this stuff.
Well, I think it's great. I just think that him leaving his things to Pacific University made quite a statement about Vic the man. Because he could have well given it to his alma mater.
Oh, yeah.
And he basically, I think, he's thought so well of that university. And, of course, I dearly fell in love with your president up there when she was on, she was representing Oregon Health Sciences mm-hmm. at the state board. I mm-hmm. think Leslie was just great.
Yeah.
But I think that was says a lot of his feeling about, you know, let's do something with the other universities. We don't always have to be playing games with the big ones.
Yeah, yeah. And trying to really track down why he did that, because he was always kind of, well, I just like the place. But from his family and from some other people from the 1950s and 60s, it was his district. Because he was just before, it was before the single member districts.
Yeah.
And so he represented Pacific University for 12 years.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he also has some fascinating things to say about the multi member districts versus single. He likes the multi members and never liked the single.
Yeah.
From his point of view, it made, in effect, the constituents became meaner because you were personally theirs.
Yeah.
Whereas with a group, it was a different,
well, different feeling. Yeah.
So that's some things that's going to be really fun to explore.
It is.
And, you know, just look at it and say, you know, in the future, maybe.
Right.
You know, those kinds of things.
Great.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.